Welcome to Free Speech Bites. I'm Kirsty Hughes, Chief Executive at Index on Censorship. Free Speech Bites is our podcast series made in association with SAGE. In this series, Nigel Warburton interviews a number of leading figures about free expression and why it matters.
Irshad Manji is a Muslim reformist, author of The Trouble with Islam Today, and director of the Moral Courage Project at New York University. Irshad Manji, welcome to Free Speech Bites.
Thrilled to be here.
The topic we're going to focus on is Islam and free expression. Now, first off, that sounds like two incompatible things. How can you talk about free expression in the context of Islam?
Well, you know, I'm a person of faith. My faith is Islam. For me, free expression is as much a religious obligation as it is a human right. And what I mean is this. We Muslims, as monotheists, are to be worshiping one God, not God's self-appointed ambassadors, which means no human being can legitimately behave as if he or she owns a monopoly on truth. And what that in turn means is that it's a spiritual duty for Muslims then to help build societies in which we can disagree with one another in peace and with civility, because anything less means that we're playing God with one another. And that is the central sin in Islam. So here's the bottom line and paradox, if you will. Devoting yourself to one God obliges you to defend human liberty.
That's not obviously how this has been played out in terms of Islam.
Boy, do I ever know that.
So why do so many people go down another route and think that actually there being one God demands that you follow one particular set of rules, one particular view of what that God is like and what it is for that God to be offended?
There are many reasons for this, and no excuses, but many reasons. And I know that a lot of our listeners right now will be saying to themselves, whatever the reasons, violence, oppression, and the stifling of free expression are inherent within the faith of Islam. I don't see it that way. You might call me a walking contradiction, but I'm still walking, and I'm still breathing, and I'm still talking. So with all of that in mind, one of the points that I make particularly to young Muslims is that, you know, there's a difference between identity and integrity. Authorities, so-called authorities, will always tell us who we are, identity, and therefore what we are to believe. They will also persuade us that our beliefs will only be sincere and pure if we adopt a particular identity. What they never tell us is that it's their identity we're supposed to adopt. And I don't play that game. I call the imams and the muftis and the mullahs and the clerics out on all of this. And I point out that integrity is a far more worthwhile pursuit over identity. Integrity is our wholeness, and it's the willingness to reconcile the many aspects of who we are. Because, and again, I come from a perspective of deep faith when I say this, each of us, you and me and all of our listeners, each of us is a unique creature of God, which means that we are always going to have seeming contradictions about us in the way we think, for example, that will go against the grain of what our so-called community leaders are telling us is the pure way to think or believe. And by reconciling those seeming contradictions into wholeness, into integrity, what we wind up doing from a perspective of faith is we wind up deepening our relationship with that creator that endowed us with this uniqueness. So once again, for me, identity frankly bites, okay? Identity is not where I'm at. Integrity is where I'm at, and I come at this from a religious point of view.
Well, two things occur to me there. That first of all, that you're proselytizing for integrity in a way analogous to the people you're criticizing. You're saying this is the one true way. And the other one is the one true way actually there in the text, as it were? Is it in the Quran?
Right. It's a very interesting point you make about proselytizing about the one true way. Actually, don't misconstrue my passion for a belief that I have the truth. I try to abide by a beautiful passage in the Quran which states that humility is above all what's needed from human beings. Why? Because, as the Quran says, about itself, The Quran says about itself. There are some passages in this book that are precise and other passages that are vague. And only those with disbelief in their hearts will focus on the passages that are vague so that they can decree certain interpretations to others. Believers, understand that only your Lord has the full and final meanings of these passages, which is a clear call for humility. So I'm passionate, if you will, about the need for humility. And that means I don't claim to have the one true way. But I do believe that I've got an interpretation of Islam that allows for Islam not just to be a straight path, which Muslims love to call it, but frankly, can also be a wide path, a path in which even those of us who call ourselves or know ourselves to be misfits can walk that path. My interpretation of Islam, my free speech interpretation of Islam, has a lot of corroboration within the Quran itself. Again, we never hear about this, but there are plenty of passages in the text that support freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, freedom of even disbelief. And one of the great moments in recent history, the struggle for freedom of expression within Islam, was when the Mufti of Egypt, obviously liberal scholar, you'll see why in a second I say obviously liberal, when he came out against the death penalty for apostates. And he pointed out all of these passages in the Quran that actually say that if you choose to disbelieve, that is indeed your choice. Human beings do not have a right to penalize you for it. Only God has the right to punish you. In other words, the Quran wasn't arguing against itself. That is to say, you can choose to believe or choose not to believe. It's all good either way. No. What it was saying is, if you choose to disbelieve, then understand that that is your right and God will deal with you. We human beings have no right to penalize you for it. That suggests to me that if a traditional authority can understand this, that I'm not so radical in my interpretation. I think among the problems is that we, in contemporary society, all of us, give very little thought to what diversity actually means. Progressive people tend to reduce diversity to your skin color and my religion. But actually, when you think about it, diversity is so much more than that. There's something to diversity above the neck. It doesn't just mean religion and skin color. It means differences of opinions and viewpoints. And different ideas will naturally offend different people. So here's the great principle I want to convey in this conversation, that offense is not a problem to be avoided at any price in the name of diversity. Quite the opposite. Offense is the price of honest diversity.
Isn't that where in the 21st century Islam has come into direct conflict with the West, as it were? That, I mean, if you take the almost cliched example of the Danish cartoons, that brought to a head what seems from outside an extremely intolerant religion with a kind of provocative liberalism.
Well, frankly, it seems from the inside as well a very intolerant religion. But one of the things I've learned in this rather surreal journey that I've taken over the last decade as an author who is known to be arguing for reform within my faith, I've learned that there actually is a difference between Islam and Muslims. Precisely because the Quran is a text that is breathing and living and has, like the Torah and the Bible, many passages that seem to be contradicting one another. It is up for interpretation and reinterpretation and reinterpretation of the reinterpretation. Whereas Muslims, as very flawed human beings, frankly, have allowed what I've argued to be Arab culture, a very sort of tribal form of interpretation, to conquer the faith of Islam. So we're needing to grapple with imperialism from within the faith itself. The biggest threat to free expression within Islam is not American foreign policy, as bad as it may be on many occasions, and it's not Israeli Zionism, as harsh as it may be on many occasions. The biggest threat to free expression among Muslims is Arab tribal culture.
What you said about openness to interpretation would not be controversial for most Christians, for most Jews, for most Buddhists. And yet, to say that in the context of Islam is to say something extremely controversial and actually to put your life at risk.
Yeah, I guess, accommodated myself to the reality that I may have to die for this cause. But why would I fear that? No, seriously, why would I fear that? If I believe that Allah is a God of love, then speaking of free expression, I have to then also make the wager that if I'm doing something wrong in arguing for this interpretation of Islam, then this God of love will at the very least give me a fair hearing on the Day of Judgment. In other words, it will be a conversation, and I might not win the argument. I'm not saying I will win that argument. But if it is a God of love, then he, she, or it will have recognized that I've been endowed by that very creator with the capacity to make choices, and that that creator will have to own the consequences of endowing me with that capacity. Now, what if that creator is not a God of love? In that case, it was never worth worshiping in the first place. So I'm no further back than I am right now.
Yet many people would feel that what you're saying is actually hateful, not full of love, and it's offensive. You knew it was going to be found offensive by some people. How is that compatible with humility that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah. Well, because I'm what might be termed a pluralist rather than a relativist. Now, relativists are people who fall for anything because they stand for nothing, whereas pluralists are people who are willing to take the risk of making judgments every day about what is right and what is wrong, what is tolerable and intolerable, what is conscionable and unconscionable. But pluralists do so recognizing that our judgments are always ever temporary, provisional, meaning contingent upon having more experiences in life and hearing better arguments down the road. Hence the centrality of free speech. Relativists don't make judgments at all. Fundamentalists make judgments with arrogance. Pluralists take the view that judgment is necessary in order to live an ethical life, but that precisely because we don't, as human beings, own the truth, we've got to be open to changing our minds to wherever the preponderance of evidence takes us. Back to the question of offense, I've experienced over the last number of years the phenomenon, and it is a phenomenon, it is very widespread, whether in interfaith dialogues, which give me the shivers because really, what good are they, or on university campuses, that you must, Irshad Manji, respect me. Ah, there's that epic word, respect. But what that's come to mean is, don't challenge me. Here's my question. If we avoid asking each other searching and pointed questions, as you, Nigel, are asking me right now, if we avoid those kinds of engagements, then are we not at least implicitly treating one another as infants? And in that case, where's the respect? To me, that's disrespect. And by the way, that is also dishonest diversity.
Well, in Britain, we have laws which prevent so-called hate speech against racial groups, hate speech that's perceived to be homophobic, and hate speech that's perceived to be targeting religion. In the States, the First Amendment protection allows people to be more obnoxious, actually. Yes. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think it's a great thing. Unfortunately, however, whether it's in America or anywhere else of the shrinking territories in which free speech is taken seriously, we human beings tend not to use our freedoms very constructively. So let me give you a quite recent but very specific example, the so-called Ground Zero Mosque, Park 51, as it's more formally known. What I've noticed is that people tend to either approve or disapprove of it, not based on the merits of the project, but rather based on how offended they feel by people with the opposite views. So that both camps wind up becoming pawns of the culture of offense. And what I try and do in my work is point out that, in fact, we can use our freedoms more constructively by asking questions out loud. So, for example, will women and men at the Ground Zero Mosque be segregated at any time of the day or night? If so, then it's not a modern facility. It's not in alignment with the liberal democratic mentality that has led to us having the freedom to engage one another about this very question. And on that basis, I reject the Ground Zero Mosque. It's not about location for me. It's about what it actually does and what it represents. And I come to that conclusion based on asking questions out loud. But it's a temporary conclusion. Somebody, anybody, tell me where I've gone wrong. Help me understand why I should be for it. I'm willing to listen. But also, as part of that reciprocity, you must be willing to face my challenges. That is what freedom is all about.
Well, one argument that's sometimes used is that that's all very well for the strong, eloquent people, but often the people challenged in this way are the weaker minority who do not have necessarily the capacity to come back in this seminar that you're talking about.
Yeah, how boring, how dull, what a lazy argument. And it's demeaning. It's demeaning because it automatically assumes that based on some label that you've decided or one has decided to give to me, I can't handle the overwhelming logic of your point of view. Therefore, I will, you know, not subject you to my superior intelligence. Please, please go for it. Hit me with it, okay? Test me. And I find that this argument that you've made on behalf of others who actually can articulate that argument, I find that it's very much a product, a construct of multiculturalism as it's been practiced for the last, I would say, 25, 30 years. As it is practiced, multiculturalism seduces us to treat one another as commodities or labels endowed with the baggage of our parents, rather than as human beings with the capacity for self-reflection and personal growth. And I choose, and it is a choice, by the way, and happily so, I choose to see people as individuals first and foremost. They will have to prove to me that they're not up for the conversation. I don't assume it right off the bat, and nor should it be assumed of me.
But some people will say this is just a very Western view of individualism. It's inspired by, maybe even by existentialism. It's underplaying the importance of continuity and tradition and being part of a particular cultural group.
Yeah, bullshit. And here's why. I go back to my faith. Within Islam, there has been a wonderful tradition of independent thinking, critical reasoning, debate, dissent, and therefore reinterpretation. And that tradition has a name. And it's known as ijtihad, I-J-T-I-H-A-D, ijtihad. Sounds, I know, eerily like jihad to many non-Arab ears. And in fact, I will be honest enough to say that it comes from the same root, meaning to struggle. But unlike any concept of violent struggle, ijtihad is all about struggling with the mind in order to comprehend the delicious complexity of the world that God has bequeathed to us. So within the faith of Islam itself is this tradition. But what this particular tradition, what it mitigates against is traditionalism. Tradition is always evolving. Traditionalism never evolves. And it is we human beings who decide when a tradition must become static and therefore traditionalism. Okay? It's not the problem of the tradition itself. It's the problem that we human beings, in our lust for power and in our insecurity to be proven wrong, it is we human beings who have to own the consequences of what we do in the name of traditions.
It's one thing to have the freedom of thought, It's another one to have the courage to express dissent in a way which will make yourself vulnerable. Where do you think people get that courage to do that?
It's a great question, if only because, you know, here at New York University, I teach something called moral courage, a lofty phrase really popularized by Senator Robert F. Kennedy three generations ago, in which he defined moral courage as the willingness to speak truth to power within your community for a greater good than just what benefits your community. Now, he emphasized, as I did in this response, within your community, because, as he pointed out, there is no backlash more painful, more searing than that which comes from your quote-unquote own people. Sure, you can point fingers at the outside world and yell, all of you out there are responsible for my people's ills. And you can go back to your people and wear this indictment as a badge of honor. Look at all that I'm doing to stand up for us against them. Don't I know where I belong? But it is far more frightening to risk losing that instant security blanket by pointing out abuses of power within your community. And that is why the word community itself, always in the spirit of ijtihad, needs to be rethought. My point of view so far in this journey of life is that community is not simply about that group into which you were born. Community can be an agglomeration of people anywhere in the world who have selected values for themselves, and therefore, again, must own the consequences of those values. I remember one of the most lovely emails I've ever received was from somebody who said, I live in the Czech Republic, I'm male, I'm white, I'm heterosexual, and I'm an atheist. In other words, nothing like you, Irshad, but there is something like you. I also love individual liberty, freedom of conscience, pluralism of peaceful ideas, and the universality of human rights. Those are my chosen values, and I see that I share them with you. Am I a part of your community? For me, the unequivocal answer is yes. Muslims who do not share my values are not part of my community. They're human. You know, I'm not disputing their humanity. But they're not part of my community.
Irshad Manji, thank you very much.
God bless.
For more information about Index on Censorship, go to www.indexoncensorship.org.